Director Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners and everybody. Thanks for being here. I have 9 or 10 topics to go over. Some of them won't take very long. Others might take a little bit longer. I've been on the road quite a bit here the last month or so, and as you'll hear, quite a few additional meetings that I'll be attending outside Olympia here in the next few weeks. And when I checked into the Best Western Motel last night, I discovered that I'd been risen to a diamond status and was treated with a bottle of water and a bag of microwave popcorn. So, there was no waffle this morning, actually. Madam Chair, you're right. Carol Turcotte did retire here just at the end of the month, and we had an opportunity to gather and give her our best wishes and send her off with some cake and some momentums of gifts. Thank you. There's some mementos for the really great contribution that she has made. We are fortunate. We have Teresa Gibbs came to us, and we were able to get her on board and have her spend a little bit of time with Carol before she retired. And did have an opportunity to read the letter that came from you, Chair Wecker, and myself that went through her career and thanked her for all her contributions. So, we'll be sure and get your personal thanks. I did see that email that came through, I think, after she had left, but we'll be sure she gets that. Not too long ago, the Commission adopted some rules pursuant to the Giant Pacific Octopus, and virtually all the comments that I've received since you took that action were favorable and supportive of your action. One of the things that we heard during that discussion was the incredible diving opportunities that exist here in Puget Sound, and that the ability to go down and observe a giant Pacific octopus was one of the many draws that brings people to Washington to partake in the the sport of diving. So our public information office, led by Bruce Bodka, since you took that action, they've been working to put together this map that I distributed. They have distribution strategies to both go to all the diving organizations. Of course, we'll have it up on our website, and to reach out to any national diving organizations and international diving organizations where we can get this information out. So I think it's a good step in making the dive community not only aware of the area, the closures, but also making them aware of the opportunity to come and view this animal.
I think it's either.
Changing topics now. We've all been really focused on trying to figure out a way to get youth more involved in outdoor recreation, fishing, hunting, other outdoor activities that our action support, and we have put together a youth advisory focus group, and we're going to be bringing those young people together here next weekend for their first meeting, so we're pretty excited about that, as I know the commission is, and so we're looking forward to getting together with those young people and getting their ideas on how we can do a better job of getting them into these kinds of outdoor activities. I'm constantly, well, as I get older, I'm reminded more often that there's this generational gap, mm-hmm. and the things that the way to get information to me is not the same way to get information and encourage others that may be younger than I am. So we're anxious to get their insight on that. Another just a really remarkable thing that happened this week is that we completed the purchase of the Tianaway. The state did. It's a little over 50,000 acres, as you know, that's east of the Clee Elum area. And the landowner was from New York, flew out here, and we had some signing of the documents. Department of Natural Resources will be the fee title holder. But an important part that we have is we have a habitat conservation easement, also we have an interagency working agreement with the Department of Natural Resources. So it really is a true partnership, and I think it's I don't know of another example of where two agencies have come together and partnered in a way that the Department of Fish and Wildlife and Department of Natural Resources have done in this particular circumstance. And I'm Commissioner Goldmark and I also signed these two documents, the interagency agreement and the habitat conservation easement. I brought copies for you, so I'll be handing those out at a break to make sure that you know what's in them. I think it's important just to draw some attention to our habitat conservation easement and what our objectives are, so if you'll bear with me. There are four principal objectives: to protect and enhance water supply and protect the watershed, to maintain working lands for forestry and domestic livestock grazing while protecting key watershed functions and aquatic habitats, to maintain and, where possible, expand recreational opportunities consistent with watershed protection for such activities as hiking, fishing, hunting, horseback riding, camping, birding, snowmobiling, and to conserve and restore vital habitat for fish, including deer, elk, large predators, spotted owls, and those wildlife values. And the fifth one, that value that is maybe the most important, is working with the Yakima Integrated Working Group, that group that brought together a really diverse group of interests and made that plan a reality. There's a lot of additional steps that need to be taken to fully implement that plan. The acquisition of the Tianaway and the management of the Tianaway for the objectives I mentioned is but one of those. So the other commitment that I articulated when I had an opportunity to speak over at the Grange Hall in the Tianaway area here a couple of days ago was that commitment to work with the local community to make sure that the decisions that we make or that we make in cooperation with the Department of Natural Resources are ones that reflect the values of the community. So it's really an exciting opportunity for us. From the ag interests to the county commissioners, other local jurisdictions, the environmental community, all of those interests came together in a real celebration of this this week over in Clee Elum.
I would suggest we mention Jeff Tare and his contribution. I know, yeah, a lot of people worked on this.
There were a lot of people that worked on it. The Region 3 staff and Teresa Scott and Joe Storr really worked hard with his I don't know if that is his counterpart, but at DNR to bring these documents together. I think in the Department of Fish and Wildlife looked to Jeff Tare as kind of our champion of this project, of this acquisition. So thanks for mentioning him. Completely switching topics here. NOAA Fisheries, you've heard us talk about the potential of the merger of the Northwest and Southwest regions. So the Northwest region was headquartered in Seattle, included Washington, Oregon. The Southwest region was down in Long Beach. And they have officially merged now and have a new organizational structure. Will Stell is the regional administrator for the new West Coast region, and Bob Turner also takes on a more prominent role in the Sustainable Fisheries Division, which used to be split with coastal pelagic, so sardines, anchovies, squid, as well as highly migratory species, sharks, swordfish, those types of species were managed out of the Southwest region. In the Northwest region, they had split salmon apart from groundfish, and so under this new organizational structure, all of those species groups are going to be under the Sustainable Fisheries Division, and Bob Turner is going to lead that. So obviously, we've got a long relationship with Bob, and so we're happy to see him in that role. Earlier this week, and earlier meaning Monday, Nate Pamplin traveled to Washington, D.C. and testified on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's proposed rule to delist Canis lupus, species of wolves. I have copies of his testimony here that I'll provide you. He had 2 minutes. And he focused on the strength of our state conservation and management plan and our strong position to responsibly manage recovery and sustainable populations of wolves in Washington was his primary message. But I'll provide you with copies of that and anyone else that would like to see that. As Commissioner Schmitten mentioned, we also had our roundtable over in Brewster last Thursday, I think it was, and had a good attendance, had several county commissioners there, a reasonable turnout of 35 or so, in addition to the Region 2 staff that and Regional Director Jim Brown. We had our regional program managers there, including our Captain Anderson and Carmen Andenagy from Habitat and Jeff Korth and Matt Monda. So had a good crew there. We did, as Commissioner Smitten mentioned, running a little. There really wasn't a technical difficulty because when you don't have the equipment, you don't have any difficulties with that kind of stuff. So, we've come to rely maybe too much on PowerPoint, you know. And so there was I don't know if it was a moment of panic or the panic was a little longer than a moment that we didn't have the equipment to project that, our materials, but I was thinking to myself, well, 10 years ago, I wouldn't even have dreamed of putting a PowerPoint together to make a presentation, so this should be okay, this is good practice. So we made it through and had a good discussion, and really, I almost think it might have been better that we didn't have one than having one, so those things tend to become a crutch a little bit. I'm going to turn now to the Columbia River policy implementation, and I know there's going to be some more detail on this topic with the Fish Committee meeting. Is that at noon? Is that right?
Yeah.
And so I won't go over too much of this in detail, but just a couple of pieces. We have established, you'll recall that we need to do this under the Emerging Commercial Fisheries Statute. If we're going to limit licenses, you have to establish it as an emerging commercial fishery. then the director has two choices. You make it, you limit the number of participants, and if you do that, you have to establish it as with these experimental permits, or there's another type of permit if you're not going to limit participation. But part of in that statute is the requirement to form an advisory group, which we have done. So that's the meetings of the advisory group, of course, are going to be open to the public, and we'll be issuing announcements about when and where those meetings are going to take place. We also are using a tangle net fishery in our coho fishery this fall. And we've been working with Jim Scott in particular and making sure that we have onboard observers in a sufficient number that we can quantify the release of unmarked coho and any other salmonid species that might be encountered. So we're looking to have about a 10% observer coverage to do that. And so that's up from what we had in previous years. So, and I really appreciate the staff that have stepped up and been willing to do that. So we'll, you know, and as part of that, we're going to be recording the condition of the wild coho and steelhead released and start putting together some of that, be able to have some of that data put together and be able to look at our release mortality rates that we're using and ground truth that. Another piece is the Klamath, Cathlamet net pens. We've solicited a public comment on our SEPA for sighting and releasing spring Chinook from net pens at Cathlamet, and the City Council has voted to support sighting the pens at the city dock. And our decisions about implementation of commercial fisheries will depend on the results of the test fishery. And so, right, you know, at this moment in time, at least the preliminary look I had at the data that we had so far doesn't suggest that we have a high enough quantity of hatchery fish present. And I wouldn't take that too much farther. That's a real preliminary look at what we've seen. But, of course, we don't have the fish there yet. From the net pen, so but we are, you know, we've done some initial testing just to look at stock composition, presence, absence of listed fish, marked fish, to take a look at that. And then the other piece for this year is the beach seine fishery, we are trying to pursue having another beach seine opportunity for that type of alternative gear. And we were a little bit surprised because we got a letter from NOAA Fisheries suggesting that we didn't that wasn't included in our consultation. So we've written a letter back to them and respond and described how the fishery would work, number of participants, where it would occur, release of wild fish, the release mortality rates that we would be using, the studies that we have to back those up. So we're hoping to get over that hurdle. But I was a little bit surprised by the suggestion that we need to reinstitute consultation.
Would that be a consultation with the co-managers or with NOAA?
No, with NOAA under the Endangered Species Act, okay, to ensure that this fishery wouldn't be in conflict with the biological opinion that we have through the consultation. So we also are continuing to work with Oregon. Of course, we've had the issue across the river with the lawsuit against their regulations, their rules that they passed through their commission. So we have a meeting where myself and Roy Elliker, my counterpart in Oregon, as well as our senior managers, our assistant director from the fish program, Jim Scott, we're going to be meeting on October 8th down in Vancouver to continue planning for next year, because we've got a lot of additional implementation pieces to proceed with next year, in part depending on how the legal challenge in Oregon goes. So, but we want to be ready to move quickly, depending on how that comes out. So,
are you? Now I can't remember. Did you say that we've had a meeting of our advisors on that new advisory?
I don't believe that the advisors have met yet. I think they're planning to do that in November. Okay. I think late October. October. Okay. So, wanted to talk just a few minutes about Grays Harbor. We had a situation in Grays Harbor where we had a one-week Chinook retention opportunity in what we call the estuary area, the lower part of the river, and in Grays Harbor proper. And that was then going to be followed up by Chinook release. And maybe the obvious reason for that is that the number of harvestable Chinook based on our preseason forecast was 2,800 fish. Of course, we're sharing that with the Chehalis tribe and the Quinault Indian Nation. And then relative to the state fishery, looking at Chinook opportunity for the recreational fishery in the estuary area, as well as freshwater and then commercial. So from an allocation perspective, we were closely following our draft Grays Harbor management plan and the tier schedule that we have in there from an allocation perspective. And we had just under 400 fish Chinook that we projected preseason to be taken in this one-week opportunity. And midway through the week, I believe it was Thursday, Jim Scott and Ron Warren, our Region 6 regional program manager, came and met with me, and the number of boats, number of anglers participating in the fishery was considerably higher than we had projected. The success rate was higher than what we had projected. And matter of fact, when on the opener, I think it was close. It's a one fish limit. It was close to one fish an angler. And we were at don't quote me on this number, but we were somewhere around 900 or so out of something under 400 that we had projected. And we were at Thursday, we had had a Creole. A lot of the boats were originating their trips out of the boat ramp at Westport, which is a superior ramp to what is at Johns River. And then there's also another access point up at the 7th Street boat ramp at Hoquiam. And we had our creel samplers in Westport sampling the fishery on two of the days. So we had some of that data, and we also did flights to do some boat counts as the fishery started. And so I'm not going to say that it's a rock-solid projection, but based on the information we had, we had exceeded the catch by then almost twice of what we had projected preseason. And if we had let it go through Sunday and the catch rates had stayed the same, we would be pushing 1,300 fish or actually over 1,300 fish. So we made was a difficult decision, but one that I thought was a correct one, to close the fishery early. And so the question was, well, how quick do you do that? And it was Thursday afternoon, and obviously the weekends are really popular, and people are making travel plans, guides have reservations made, all those kinds of complicating factors. And so we closed the fishery on that Saturday evening. We let the Saturday fishery take place and closed it effective Sunday. We also closed it for the coho part of the fishery the following week because we had also, of course, calculated Chinook release mortality rates associated with the coho fishery. And because of their run timing, being there right at the end of September for Chinook, we also thought that by closing that coho fishery for, I think it was 6 days, if that's right, that we could maybe make up a little ground with the Chinook release mortality that we had assumed during that time frame, while still preserving the coho fishery, because of the peak of the run for coho in Grace Harbor is generally in the first week, 2 weeks of October. So this, our closure went through, I believe it went through the 28th of September, the 23rd to the 28th. We reopened it then on the 29th, and the other opportunities in the Chehalis and the Satsa are as the preseason plan season specific. So we've got we had a on the state side, we had 170 of the Chinook impacts allocated to the commercial fishery. That's going to, the use of tangle nets, I believe, is 1 day out of the 7 days that we have for a commercial fishery, and we delayed that fishery until later in October and get as far away from the Chinook as we can, because we had this run of 140,000 coho and a Chinook run that was had 2,000 fish over the escapement goal that we had to, of course, split with the Quinault Nation, and then we have to split the non-treaty share between the state and the Chehalis tribe. So it didn't leave us much wiggle room. A lot of pushback on the closure, disrupted, even though we tried to leave some time, albeit not very much. It disrupted people's plans, and of course they weren't happy about that. But given the circumstance of the numbers and what we had seen, we really felt like it was the appropriate thing to do. So the other piece of on Grace Harbor is that we've been talking about the management plan, that we've been calling it a draft plan since 2007, I think it is. But we've been using particularly the tiered allocation schedule that was developed with our advisors, and we have indicated previously that we wanted to bring the appropriate components of that forward to the commission. And in further thinking about that, rather than, you know, bringing the plan forward, we thought a better approach would be to have a Grace Harbor salmon fishery management policy. So kind of following a little bit of the model we did in the Columbia River. So we're going to be, our Jim and Ron and others will be briefing the Fish Committee here today on our schedule. We have a pretty aggressive plan that you will see, and I'll hand copies of this out. I won't go through it in a lot of detail other than to say our first advisory group meeting would be October 14th, another one in October 28th, an update to the commission, a couple more in November, coming back to the commission, and a process that leads to a decision in February. And so we're also kind of looking back at the model that the commission used for the Puget Sound crab policy, where we develop a suite of alternatives that represents a range, and then bring that back and see if the commission, are we out of bounds with the range, and if we included the options that you would like to see. So vetting that through the advisors, coming back, I think it's in November, for that feedback. Get a finalization from the commission's perspective on options that would go out for public review in December, go through the public review process, and then come back with an update in January, and then a decision in February. Got this laid out in the proposed schedule. Again, be sharing that with the Fish Committee. I'll hand it out so all of the commissioners have the advantage of seeing that. Just on a couple of things that are a little are quicker. Several of them are quicker. Did the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission, some of you are aware of that group. It's made up of, it's a commission that's established by Congress. It enables us to make interstate agreements without being in violation of the U.S. Constitution. And it includes the states of Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and California. And they have an annual meeting. They have professional staff. They have lobbyists, which we've they've also helped us with everything from our fish counters to our Tri-State Dungeness Crab Committee and other kinds of support that they offer. And so they had their meeting over in Coeur d'Alene. It started a week ago Sunday. And one of the things that I just wanted to out of that meeting was that this, you know, where we are on some funding issues that are pretty scary from a federal funding perspective. You know, we've got the salmon management line item that includes Mitchell Act and Pacific Salmon Treaty. The cut to that is about 6% as a result of the sequester, and would then in the second year there would be an additional 11-15% cut to those funds. For Mitchell Act in this first year, that 6% equated to about $250,000 reduction from our base. We had some carryover from the year before, so we were able to get through this year without making any production cuts. But you add on another $500K or so, that would be from an 12% cut, and we're going to start running into more trouble about production. And the other piece is marking. So very, very concerned about where that's headed. And then the other piece is, of course, Congressman Dix was instrumental in getting us some hatchery reform dollars to put into those facilities. We've seen that reduced, and you know, whether or not that totally disappears or not, we're uncertain as of this time. But with the Mitchell Act EIS coming, about to be finalized, and the option that would preserve production at kind of a status quo level is dependent on hatchery reform. So reducing the interaction of wild fish with of hatchery fish with wild fish in the natural environment, broodstock management, all of those kinds of things, the cost of weirs in order to do some of those things, all that is in jeopardy. So it's a pretty scary picture. The other side of is the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund, which has been as high as, I believe, $80 million. It's currently $65 million, and in the president's budget for next year, it's $50 million. In the House, it's $35 million, and in the Senate, it's $65 million. So, I mean, not surprising, the House is at a low watermark, but even the president's at $50 million, which is obviously a $15 million cut. That money gets spread out in a lot of different places. The money that comes to Washington, the majority of it goes into habitat restoration protection projects administered through the Surf Board. But we also get, as an agency, about $2 million. And a chunk of that has been used for marking. And most of that money that's been used for marking has been in tribal hatcheries. And we're getting really strong signals from NOAA that using PACSURF money for marking is a problem. And so when you look at what's going on with Mitchell Act, you look at what's going on with PACSURF, and again, you know, we've seen cuts, 6% of the sequester this year. We didn't get touched out of that. There were other beneficiaries from PACSURF that took the cuts that came to Washington other than the Department of Fish and Wildlife. We go to 11 to 15% next year, and I'll be surprised if we're able to hold the line on that. So there's just some, you know, the foundation of our management right now is being able to mark those fish from a conservation perspective, from a hatchery production perspective, obviously from a harvest perspective, and, you know, coming out of the just the meeting with our co-managers yesterday, you know, the picture would be, I think we'd be having a lot more problems if we didn't have marked selective fisheries and we were dependent on having fisheries. Without that tool, we'd be in a whole lot worse place. So I'm just kind of ringing the alarm bell, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we're trying to do about that.
The NOAA objection to using that funding for mass marking, what's the basis?
I think it's that it wasn't the gear type, as I understand it, wasn't included during our consultation on our fisheries. So I think we've written back to them. I'm confident we're going to get to a yes, but I think it's largely a procedural issue rather than a substantive issue. I'm hoping. Changing gears again, we were able to get a permit to do our maintenance on our island up in Skagit County for waterfowl from the Army Corps of Engineers on Monday morning this week. And that may not sound like a big deal, but we've been working on it pretty hard with Commissioner Carpenter for the last 4 months. And thanks to Colonel Estock for responding to my Sunday morning email to him that says we want this by October 1, and on September 30th we got it. So that's pretty cool. Through the government shutdown, we've got U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and other federal entities that are closing their lands, including national wildlife refuges, to the public use. There's been some engagement from the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, Ron Reagan in particular, with Dan Ash, who's the director of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I don't see the door opening there. I think what I've got, which I just got this morning, is a pretty clear indication that those lands are going to remain closed until the government shutdown is over. There are some exceptions with BLM and U.S. Forest Service, as I understand it, that some of their lands may remain open, but U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in particular will not. No, we had our co-managers meeting yesterday, and six of our commissioners were there and participating, and we'll have a chance to debrief about that once we kind of assess where we are. We came up with five or six key areas where work needed to be done. We had some, I think, pretty frank and candid conversations about co-management and what life is like with it and what life is like without it. And life may not be great either way, but trying to manage fisheries independently, from my perspective, isn't an option. So on the other hand, we certainly have had some difficulties, and so it was a good conversation, and we'll talk more about that. Just closing up, just looking ahead to give you an idea, we've got Centennial Accord, so it'll be Governor Inslee's first Centennial Accord. It's coming up on Thursday. I'm going to be playing a role in the presentation from leading the state agency presentations on the culvert case and tribal hunting. A week from Monday, I go to Jennifer Kwan and I are going to travel back to the nation's capital to meet with the Army Corps of Engineers on our Puget Sound Nearshore Restoration project. You'll recall we've got about a $20 million investment in that, 10 on each, from the 10 from the state, 10 from the Corps, on a suite of 18 projects that would restore about 5,400 acres of estuary habitat. And we ran into a pretty serious problem with Army Corps of Engineer headquarters back in March, who were invoking a policy they pulled out of somewhere that essentially disqualified some of the major projects that we've been working on with the region for 10 years. So we've been kind of a full court press and pushing back with really great support from Colonel Estock here in the region. So we're going to be going back, and we are meeting with the leadership back there to see if we can come to a resolution on that issue. And we're also going to be going meeting with the budget folks on some of the issues that I raised, as well as NOAA leadership, Sam Roush, who's the assistant administrator for NOAA Fisheries, so to talk about the in particular the Mitchell X and Salmon Management Funds. Then the next week, it's off to Ketchikan for a meeting with the Pacific Salmon Commission, where that's our the fall meeting of the commission. And then the following week to Costa Mesa at a meeting with the Pacific Fishery Management Council. I'm going to be down there for about 4 days, and then Michelle Culver's coming in and picking up the balance of the days of the meeting. So quite a bit of travel left to do here in the next 4 weeks.
Great. Any questions for the director?
Just one. Sure. Oh,
Commissioner Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Nice poster, Bruce. Mm-hmm. Good job. I'm sure the distribution has been well thought out, but I just want to make sure for the tourism role to get it into the diving magazines out there, because I could see a one-page spread that, especially those with international distribution, but very nice.
I just had one thing to ask the director for some help with, perhaps. If you have the opportunity to talk with the governor, we are supposed to have a meeting with the governor each year. If you could remind him that that's in the statute.
Okay. I'd be happy to do that.
Maybe that'll push along the idea of filling our last vacancy, too. Commissioner Menken?
Phil, I'm sure we are moving to develop an alternate plan for funding under Mitchell Act and Pacific Salmon Treaty.
I'm sorry.
Are we moving at this point, and will we see soon an alternate plan, an emergency plan for funding if we get hit with the Mitchell Act cut in our hatchery system? I mean, when can the commission expect to get an update on that, I guess?
In November.
Okay.
I'm pausing because I'm thinking about how much more I'm going to know.
Yeah.
Myself and Jennifer Kwan have been talking with Noah darn near daily about this for the last 4 weeks, because we got a letter from them that seemed pretty clear that they weren't going to approve the use of any PACSERF money for marking. And maybe they stopped just a touch short of saying that, but it was really close. And so we're sounding the alarm bells really loud about where this will take us, and what are our alternatives in the event that that kind of a decision is made. What are the alternatives for funding? And I've had an opportunity to talk to a couple other folks about it in the legislature, but once we get a better understanding of what these cuts are, what they mean to production and marking, we'll be able to identify what the need is, and then where do we go to try to obtain that funding for those purposes.
Yeah, thank you.
Seems like a good opportunity to join with the tribes and discuss whether we can address some of the needs for habitat funding as well as marking, mass marking money.
Yeah, and they've weighed in on the Puget Sound Near Shore Restoration piece with us. So we have that piece. We haven't approached them on the marking piece, and so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other comments? Well, the good news is we're way ahead of schedule. Does the deputy director have something to bring forward?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I thought I would give you just about 2 minutes on the federal government shutdown, if that's okay. We've been worried about anticipating federal budget cuts for 3 or 4 years now, and they're here. And the shutdown has added some more complexity to that situation. Just as a reminder, our agency for this biennium has about $108 million in federal funds. That's about 29% of our biennial budget. That's made up of a large number of grants and contracts and the different time periods, different amounts, different purposes. So it's a pretty complicated picture to try to figure out the impacts. The shutdown's in place now, and it's not clear, as you follow the news, when that will change. There's some discussion about October 17th as the deadline for the debt limit ceiling decision, and whether or not those issues, the budget and the debt limit, would be dealt with at the same time, but we really don't know. So we're starting to work pretty intensely with the Office of Financial Management, the Governor's Office, across agencies to evaluate impacts. We're looking at the shutdown impacts that could occur to our staff. We're looking at the shutdown impacts that could occur to the services we provide to the public. The director gave you an example of another area where we're monitoring which agencies are shut down and what that means to our hunters, our fishers, recreationists in Washington State. And then as we have, we're continuing maybe more intensely if there is a budget that passes or a continuing resolution that has another increment of sequester cuts, what does that mean to the agency? So trying to monitor all of those. We're very worried that our existing contracts, the ones that have been obligated, are in place, and that money's already been, like I said, obligated. So we're not worried about those contracts being cut off at this point in time, but it may come to a point in time when there's no federal employee available to reimburse us or to, you know, manage the contract. We certainly don't expect any new contract applications to be processed. So at some point in time, the money's going to dry up. And that's, you know, that affects us in a number of ways potentially. So the bottom line is right now the impacts from the shutdown are pretty minimal, but the more time that goes by, and I'm talking weeks, not months, the more time that goes by, the more serious and severe those impacts are going to be. We are on a weekly reporting schedule to OFM, and they're gathering up a statewide perspective on impacts, and we'll keep you in the loop to make sure you understand where we are with that.
I think everybody's appalled about what's going on in Congress. I think the majority of citizens would like Congress to get to work and compromise, but we don't have any control over that. So thanks for that report. Hope it doesn't go on too long. Any other questions, comments? All right, we're way ahead of time.
Sure.
Commissioner Kehoe.
We're ahead of schedule. Phil, one thing you didn't mention in your report, I know it's hard to touch on everything, but I wanted to bring it to the Commission's attention. We in Puget Sound, North Puget Sound, just a couple weeks ago finished up on a very successful commercial fishery, both for treaty and non-treaty, on the Fraser Pinks. We had a very large return to the Fraser of 26 million pink salmon. 25% of the harvestable surplus is shared 50-50 between the state and tribes. We harvested approximately, total harvest, 4 million pink salmon, and which translates to a ex-vessel price of approximately $7 million. There was an article in the Bellingham Herald talking about that fishery and not only the benefit to fishermen, but also to the local economies in terms of employers in Whatcom County. And the price, given that $7.2 million, was very, very worthwhile for fishermen. So I think that's a little positive note I wanted to commissioners to know about, and so that's all I have.
Great. Terrific. Good news. Commissioner Smith?
I just want to thank the director for his leadership in the co-management process that we undertook in the last couple of days. I know it wasn't an easy task, but your leadership skills shone through brightly, and your enthusiasm and passion also showed through in a very positive way that I heard from many people. The commitment that you have stems from the head, but also from the heart, and I think that comes through.
Right. Well, while we're thanking people, I want to thank Commissioner Schmitten, who was very central to the development of that agenda, and I thought he did a wonderful job representing that period of time. I happened to talk with your wife the day before, and she made the comment, everybody likes Raleigh. Absolutely. That is one of the characters.
Does she all the time?
No, he gets along with everyone, so it really, that came through brightly, too. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have reached a break, and we're way ahead of schedule, so we're moving towards an early adjournment, as everyone desires. Very good. So let's take 15 minutes. We'll come back at 10:15.